Hello world, and welcome to the first episode,
very first episode
of In the Middle with Mark and Miles. I am Miles, here with my co-host.
And I'm Mark. Last time I looked.
And the thing about this show is about, you know, two different individuals from two different walks of life coming together and finding common ground in the middle.
In the middle.
And I would say we're definitely two different individuals, right?
I would say if you held us against a mirror, I think you would see the reason for differences. In a theoretical sense. But no, we're from different generations.
Definitely different, number one. Yeah.
We're definitely from different communities.
Right.
You know, you, for the most part, grew up here in New York.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in New York State, not the city, so I'm, you know, I'm a country boy.
Right.
Always wanted to be in the city.
Right.
Which put me in a lot of different places throughout the country.
Right.
But, you know, definitely a different perspective on things.
When did you actually come to, like, the city?
City?
Yeah.
2005.
2005?
Yeah. So I've been here 15 years.
15 years?
Yeah. 15 years.
So how about
15 years of chaos. 15 years of chaos, yeah.
And you've seen a lot. And so you've been born, what, 61, right?
Correct.
So you've seen a lot from 61 now to 2020, right?
Right.
It's like a whole different world.
I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted with all the stuff I see. And of course, did I want to make it easy on myself? No. As I got older, I came to New York City.
Right.
What are you talking about? Totally. You know, it's like, yeah, I thought that was a good idea.
Right.
Sure. Sure it was.
And so before New York, you were in, what, Seattle?
Yeah, I lived in Seattle. I was there through the late 90s into the early 2000s.
Okay.
Until I moved here in New York. And I was in, before that, I was in San Francisco, before that, Orlando, Dallas, you know, I'm in a business that, you know, I travel a lot.
Right.
To different cities.
Right.
You know, I stay in, you know, I'm in those cities.
Right.
But if I wanted to advance my career, it was always moving to a different city. So I've seen a lot of different aspects of the country.
Right.
You know. Both red and blue. I didn't even know that was a thing,
right.
You know, until the last election had.
Right.
But so I've spent most of my life seeing very different environments.
Right.
You know, all the way to when I lived in Atlanta, and you know, saw, you know, which is probably my first experience living in an area that has a very large minority community.
Okay.
And, you know, because I grew up in the country.
Right.
We had, you know, it was very vanilla.
Right. Looked like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah. Pretty much. Pretty much. You know, Hallmark movies were actually made in my time. You know, it was a very... you know, as I see it now, it was a very closed environment.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a bad environment.
Right.
You know, I came from a pretty good family. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad was in education. He was a superintendent of a school district.
Right.
For most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was in education too. She was a phys ed teacher and then became a guidance counselor.
Okay.
You know, so I was brought up in the, you know, my dad was a public figure.
Right.
You know, he, not in big cities, but in large suburban areas.
Right.
So it was, you know, I really got a taste of what happens when you make decisions that the public doesn't necessarily agree with. Because I saw some sides of people that I really didn't agree with.
So you would say, you know, from the different area that you lived in and visited, that it gave you a different worldview compared to if you actually stayed in your town.
Correct.
Right.
I remember this one time where I had decision my dad had to make about a teacher,
right,
and whether or not to give him tenure.
Okay.
And long story short, he denied it, and it became a thing.
Right.
And it became a huge thing.
Oh, wow.
So this was in, this would have been in the 70s mm-hmm. when this was happening.
Right.
So probably late 70s, and the entire school went on a sit-in, because wow. this was a popular teacher.
Right.
And then the school board turned on my dad. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, we lived in the country, so, you know, there, my house mm-hmm. Was like 5 miles from town.
Right.
So we were in the sticks.
Right.
And, you know, my dad is getting what is considered hate mail.
Right. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was off the hook.
Wow.
I mean, it was off the hook. And seeing how in dire times mm-hmm. who your real friends are.
Right.
I remember being in the living room, and it was like Friday night, and it was late. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad were upstairs. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm talking 10:30 or so, and there's a knock on the door. Okay, again, we're in the sticks.
Right.
Okay. I think I'm like 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And okay, so I get a little hyped.
Right.
It's like, what the hell is this? So I go down, and I'm like looking, you know, around the corner, and it turns out it's my priest.
Your priest?
My priest.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, how did he know I was doing something I shouldn't have? Anyway, he was great. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I answer the door, and he goes, hey, I'm here to talk to your dad, your mom. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
Well, it turned out that, you know, later, I don't know this right at the moment, but later I realized that my dad had, like, had this big crisis event. You know, he was literally getting on the point of being, having a nervous breakdown.
Oh, man.
Because all these people that he had been close to, or at least believed he was close to,
right,
turned on him.
Right.
And, again, this is small town USA, mm-hmm. and, you know, people's beliefs can... Yeah, their belief system, they aren't tested mm-hmm. very often.
Right.
You know, you live in a city, mm-hmm. maybe you can attest to this, mm-hmm. you live in a city and you get tested a lot.
Oh, yeah.
About what you believe in.
Yeah.
But in the country, you don't.
Right.
All right. You know, you believe that you're, you know, God and country and
right.
yada, yada, mm-hmm. okay, until you're tested on it.
Right.
And then things start coming out.
Right.
You know, and maybe you stick to those guns.
Right.
Maybe that's what you really feel. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't.
Right.
You know, denying a popular teacher tenure was a crisis moment in this. And just to back up a minute, my dad got hired mm-hmm. at this school district because it was in trouble.
Right.
And he was just one of those guys. He always told me he was a pit bull. Junkyard dog. I'm just a junkyard dog. Like, you know, okay, Dad. You know, it's like, I mean, what do you say to that?
Right.
I mean, and he had, you know, he had a tough upbringing. Was, mm-hmm. You would consider him being brought up on the wrong side of the tracks mm-hmm. in rural America.
Right.
And he, you know, he grew up poor mm-hmm. And had to put himself through college. And, you know, he went in the military, served in Germany for a while during right. the Korean War.
Okay, but, yeah, I think a lot, too.
Yeah. No, yeah, crazy. Anyway, so he, mm-hmm. You know, he put himself through school and he became what he became. And mm-hmm. having that experience, he was one to always look at the standards mm-hmm. and what standards made communities or school districts great.
Right.
So he, that's what he measured against.
Right.
So he walked into this town, and again, I found all this out later.
Right.
But, you know, he walked into this town, into the school district, and realized that, holy cow, mm-hmm. there's like a lot of stuff.
Right.
No reason. I mean, he was being able to see the I don't know what you would call it. Probably less than substandard. Mm-hmm. Okay, this was a substandard school district, and part of the reason was is because nobody ever looked.
Right.
You know, go along to get along. I mean, right. That's basically the mantra that was going on at that time.
Right.
And, you know, my dad is not like that. Mm-hmm. And my dad, right. You know, he started looking under stuff. It's like, oh, whoa. It's like, look at that. And instead of closing the lid, he mm-hmm. opened it up. What came of that was, you know, finding teachers that were not certified as teachers.
Oh, wow.
And hadn't been. Mm-hmm. You know, people getting paid more for master's degrees that they didn't have.
Oh, wow.
And they had no. So, anyway, right. Yeah, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole. But, I mean, basically what it was, mm-hmm. is the culmination of all that mm-hmm. came when he denied tenure.
Right.
Okay. And when he denied tenure, mm-hmm. the public was up in arms. Because, mm-hmm. why? This was a very popular teacher.
Right.
In his mind, progressive.
Right.
You know, personally, I think he was abusing young girls at the time. That's my own personal opinion. I don't have any direct evidence right. of that, but I have a very good feeling. Anyway, so all the kids loved him, so right. all the parents are going to, you know, obviously they're going to side with the kids, and right. then it just became this ugly thing.
Wow.
And in small town America, man, it's that stuff can go left, like, quick.
Right.
So, you know, I see my priest, and I'm like, okay. And then my mom and my priest come down, and they're talking to me, and you know, they're looking at me like, how are you doing through all this? You know,
right.
I'm like, and in the back of my mind, I'm like, through what? It's, you know, because I'm like, okay, there's some stuff going on. No. I don't know if I was strong. You know, I kind of took things at face value,
right,
and just. I didn't go much deeper than that.
Right.
I think probably because I knew in my psyche that that would not be a good thing. Let's not drill down on that at 16.
Right.
I'll wait till later.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, you know, from a perspective standpoint, you know, I've been able to see many different communities.
Right.
And, you know, I was brought up in the church.
Right.
You know, I was... I was brought up Episcopal,
okay,
which is Catholic light,
right? It is, yeah.
Not as much kneeling, a right. lot of kneeling. And I was very proud of it. I was an acolyte in church. And, mm-hmm. You know, my mother was a missionary at one point,
right?
So yeah, I was brought up with those values,
right?
Now, later, mm-hmm. did I actually? Hold on to the religion part of that. No, mm-hmm. I let that go. But the lessons learned mm-hmm. with that kind of stability is different. And I think this is where people get lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people get lost because they think that if they don't think the way or feel the way the church is going,
right,
that all of a sudden God is out of their life.
Right.
And I don't believe that.
Right.
You know?
I agree.
I believe that you have to have faith.
Right.
You know, you have to. It's mm-hmm. It's part of human existence.
Right. To the beginning of time. Right.
Yeah, you know, to believe in something greater than
right.
yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Call it whatever you want.
Right.
You know. I saw something interesting where if you look at all the religions
mm-hmm.
and the deity that they pray to,
right.
Okay. All have the sound of ah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Think about that.
Right.
You know, it's like every deity you can think of, right. God in Christianity and mm-hmm. Allah.
Right.
I mean, it's like, I don't, you know, that was just a fun fact.
Right.
No, I have no idea if it's, you know, really meaningful. But,
right.
But it was kind of interesting.
Right. Very similar to you. I have very similar upbringing through, you know, I was also Catholic from maybe, I think, the first 10 years of my life. I was Catholic because my mom and my father are both Haitian, and the Haitian community is, like, big on, you know, Catholics. Like,
sure.
You know. And my parents, my father got here before my mother. I believe he was out here since maybe the 70s. My mom came out a little bit around the 80s, or maybe my father was a little bit before that. But, you know, my mother, her father was a judge. You know, before a judge, he was a lawyer. Before he was a lawyer, he was a cop. So, you know, and I think he was in the military before that. So she already had, like, this mindset of, like, okay, when I raise my boys, you know, I want my boys to be like how my father was, you know. And then when I met my grandfather, you know, like, all about discipline, you know, like, you know, this is how a man carries himself. I've learned from my grandfather, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, he had that, you know, what it was to be
discipline.
A man. Yes,
discipline.
Yes.
So. I know that's a dirty word nowadays.
Right.
Especially for your group, the millennials. It's like, discipline, what's that?
Right. But, you know, I was born and raised here, no difference. I was born and raised here in Queens, New York. You know, Queens, you know, you have, you know, Martin Scorsese is from Queens. Donald Trump is from Queens. But I'm from Southside Jamaica, Queens. So, you're, you know, like your Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and your Nicki Minaj area, you know. So, mm-hmm. where most people have considered, you know, the streets.
Nicki Minaj is from up there?
Yes.
See, I learned something new every day, bro. Learned something new every day.
Yeah, she's from the same area.
She's a small woman. Very small. Great.
Right.
Very small.
So I'm from that area, Southside Jamaica, Queens. And for a long time, I didn't, you know, really, like, even understood that what type of area I was in. Because my mother didn't like me and my brother going outside much. I have a twin brother. And she'd rather us stay in a home where it was safe, you know, especially because she's from a different country. So her perception on what the streets of America is, especially in you know, urban communities, she was just like, you guys don't have to go outside. Stay here. Watch Mary-Kate and Ashley. Don't do anything else but go outside. And, you know, of course.
Watch what?
Mary-Kate and Ashley. Yeah.
Mary-Kate
and Ashley. The girls from, you know.
The twins?
The twins, yeah.
From,
Full House. Full House and, you know, all the other shows they had afterwards.
Wow.
Because, you know, me and my brother and I, we're twins. So my mom figured, okay, those are twins. You guys are twins. This must be twin programming. It was years before we realized, oh, no, this program. For girls, Ma. This is for girls.
The craziest thing you talking about your story is when you told me you had a twin.
Right. Right, and we're complete opposites.
Exactly. It's like, oh, so you have the evil twin.
The way I like to describe it is like the movie Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Dan DeVito.
Yep.
I'm Arnold, my brother's Danny, you know? we got the best of each, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, our upbringing, you know, it was, I like to say it's a very traditional upbringing. You know, we was in the church a lot, went to school. My mom didn't like us going out, but every once in a while we'd convince her, hey, let's go to the park. And then she's like, fine, go to the park. And then, of course, we end up getting into a fight or something, you know. And she's like, this is why I don't let you guys go outside, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Go to the yard. Don't leave the yard.
You know, so,
oh, God.
You know, I for a long time, I didn't believe I even lived in a hood. You know, like, I remember as a kid, I saw films like Menace in Society and Boys in the Hood, where it's all about, like, you know, gang violence and, you know, all the street stuff. And I was just like, oh, I'm glad I don't live in an area like that.
So it was like Call to Action movies.
Right. And then for years, I didn't even know. I think it was high school when my brother bust and I learned what type of environment I was in. You know, I started learning that 50 Cent was from my neighborhood. And, you know, especially because from elementary to junior high, we never really left the neighborhood, you know, because the schools were right around the corner. We were just walking distance. And it wasn't until...
Just so different than it living in other parts of the city.
Right.
You know, and we can get into that later. But, you know, talk about my daughter's experience when we first moved here. She was in fifth grade.
Right.
First time that she had an audition.
You had to go to
school.
Right.
What? What?
Right.
I had your experience.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, we took a bus, but we, you know, got to school, and it was the same school.
Right.
It was the same school. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, that also happened to me when I was in high school. I originally auditioned to go to Hillcrest High School. That's where Ray Romano went and everything. So I'm like, okay, I want to go there because that's where all the other actors went. Now they end up saying, like, you're too far from that school, so we're going to send you this way.
So you were already thinking in terms of
acting,
creativity.
I've actually known what I want to do since I was 4 years old. I always tell people that, and it's the truth. It's literally the truth. Because both my mother and my father, they didn't know what they was doing when they gave me these two cassettes. So my father gave me a copy of the making of Michael Jackson's Thriller. And it's the, you know, the full-length music video, and then there's the whole 60-minute behind the scenes of the making of the video.
Right.
Now, my father didn't think, he just like, it was a hand-me-down from his kid, you know, because my father had three previous kids before I was born. So he was just like, all right, here, you know, this worked for them, this should work for you, you know, this will keep you quiet, you know.
Sure.
And I was just in love with just, you know, everything from the prosthetics, the makeup, the this and that, you know, so, and then my mom gave me...
Here's a live grenade. Hold on to this, you know.
See what you blow up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's
And it was very similar.
That's great, man. That's a great story.
Thank you.
That's a really great story.
similar story with my mom. You know, she gave me a video that was what she thought was Ninja Turtles 2 was the making of Ninja Turtles 2. She didn't know the difference at all. You know, like my mom was the one who was like, "In the video cassette."
So it was a perfect storm.
Yeah, you know. It's like,
now laid the foundation for the rest of your life.
Basically, they had no clue, but that literally set my path forever. After that, all I could think was in pictures and, you know, writing stories, you know. And one thing I realized what difference it made in my life was it made things easier to look at things and know what's not real and, you know, what's, you know, with, you know, that somebody wrote that, you know, like it wasn't, you know, like I remember as a kid, my mom used to get so tired.
So you got a bullshit meter.
Right. Early. Yeah.
Like, good for you.
Like, I remember as a kid, you know, like, I think it could be Michael Jackson's Thriller or any horror movie at all. You know, there's somebody getting cut up in half, or, like, even like Scarface. My mom claimed that she would watch Scarface when she was pregnant with me because she was trying to learn English. So, right? Okay. I think it was.
Talk about extreme.
Right? I think it was the only concept my father had at the time. You know, Scarface, The Godfather, you know, a whole bunch of Al Pacino movies. So that's where her introduction to, like, all right, this is English, you know?
Yeah, this is English. This is the American way.
Right. We kill people. Damn. And the funny thing about it, she didn't even understand that, you know, they were gangsters. She just saw the suits. So that's what all she knew. Because her father was always in suits. So she saw these guys in suits. So she's like, oh, you know, they're these guys are good guys. So, you know, they start cutting people in half and everything. She's like, what's going on here? But, you know, as a kid.
And of course, what's your genre?
Right. You know? But anytime we would watch any of those type of images, or she'll catch me watching any of those type of images that get really bloody and gore. So I'm like, how could you watch it? And I'm like, oh, mom, it's fake. It's food coloring and this and that. And I'm like 7. So she's how can you even comprehend that?
Do you see that? Okay, that's hilarious. It's like, yeah, mom, see that? No. That's not what it really is. But what it really is.
Like, it's a prosthetic leg. And then, like, she's just sitting there like, what are you talking about? Like, it's latex, mom. You know, they rip it apart. You know?
Which is why that kind of stuff wouldn't affect you, because you see deeper into it.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, because of my mom, we got to travel a lot as well. You know, from before I would even hit puberty, I was able to see, you know, I visited Haiti, Mexico, Great Cayman, Jamaica. You know, she pretty much took us anywhere she wanted to go. She made sure she took us. She wasn't waiting until we were old enough so she could travel. She was like, we're just all going to go travel together. You know, mm-hmm. So, you know, with that, it made me see things in a bigger picture. You know, my world wasn't just the four corners in my neighborhood, right. You know,
and important.
Yeah, it's really it important. Played a huge part in my life now.
Well, good for your mom.
Right? And one of the things I would say, the best thing my mom ever did for me and my brother, when we was 12 going on 13, we both wasn't doing too well in school. At that point in my life, I think I just got left back not too long before that. I was left back in fifth grade. My brother, he didn't get left back, but you can see that his grades were starting to slip.
Why do you think that was?
Just
weren't interested in school, or
I believe that's what it, from when I remember around that time, it was just I wasn't picking up on math right away. There was, you know,
that's universal, bro.
That, like,
universal, because I do the exact same. Oh man, math.
Math,
please.
Right, I look at my nieces and nephew homework now, and it's like, what are they even teaching you now? Like, I thought we had problems back then. At least ours, we found a way to simplify the answers. Now it was like, exactly. You gotta go through the whole world just to find the answer for X. But, you know, I can't speak for my brother why he was starting to slip in school. We at that point of our lives, we were becoming two different people. You know, mm-hmm. I was more, you know, wanted to stay home. You know, I was first, that was around the time when I started picking up filmmaking books and everything like that. My brother at the time just started getting girlfriends. And, you know, started hanging out with friends more often. And we wasn't allowed to leave the house, but my brother was taking this opportunity, especially because my mom just started working double shifts around that time. Mm-hmm. So she just had, like, 16-hour schedules. So she would be like, all right.
Your mom was...
A nurse. And two different nursing homes, two veteran homes.
Got it.
So, and we spent a lot of that time, time over there. Yeah. You know?
I'm glad she's retired now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would not have been.
Oh, no. No, not right now. She thanks God every day that she's out of there. But, yeah, around that time, 12 years old, you know, my brother and I were definitely just becoming two. That's the moment we became two different people, you know?
Well, you know, puberty.
Right.
You're in puberty definitely. All of a sudden. Okay, things are happening now. One went to the dark side. The other one, not so much.
So, you know, I was having a lot more alone time. And that's around the time I accept, you know, like, I learned to be, I could be by myself and don't need constant, you know, a friend or somebody near me to, you know, to enjoy my time alone. Yeah. You know, my brother at that time, that's when he realized he always wanted to be, like, he, I guess that's when he learned he was an extrovert. And that's when I learned I was an ambivert, where I'm like, I could be with people, but at the same time, I could be isolated and be okay.
A what?
Ambivert, I believe it's called.
Ambivert?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I'm learning something new every day. In my life, I've never heard that. Because I look at myself as a complete introvert.
Right.
It's like home time.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate my low time, but, you know, especially being in film, you have to, there's moments where you have to be in a crowd of people.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely.
So, but at the same time, I can be alone and it won't bother me at all, you know. But I realized how important that was, because around that time, my like I said, we were filming in school, and my mom decided, because we had a friend named Juwanza, his mom, he was from Africa, so his mom sent him back to Nigeria when he wasn't doing too good in school. Mm-hmm. So my mom's like, oh, okay, that seems to work for him. I'm going to do that to you guys. I'm going to send you guys back to Haiti, you know? And
what, when was this?
This is 2003. Yeah, 2003.
Ouch.
Yeah, right? So
when was the earthquake?
It was 2000. I want to say maybe 2007 or maybe 2006 around. Okay. Yeah, we just missed it. We just missed it.
Okay.
Just by a few, about a few years. Yeah. Oof. But
crazy.
So, you know, we being two American-born kids, you know, that was a complete culture clash of just living in a third world country.
Right.
You know, originally we were supposed to stay at a boarding school, but then my mom saw how, like, the standards were at the boarding school, and she was like, oh, no, you guys can't stay here. This is just bad. You know, especially because, you know, we're coming straight out of America. She's like, you guys are not ready for that type of lifestyle. That's not, you're not ready for that at all. So she made us stay with her, a friend of hers. You
it's
know,
like a refugee camp.
Right, yeah. Compared to other boarding schools, definitely. Yeah. You know, it was definitely not enough resources, you know, definitely, you know, no running water, you know, like, you know, you had to do the laundry by your hands, you know, and...
Yeah, let me... You know what? Hmm. That's a great experience, man.
It is.
Because it gives you a perspective that a lot of people...
Right.
...that believe that they are poor don't ever experience.
Right.
Because, you know, there's poor.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's American poor.
Right.
Okay.
First world problems.
And I've been exactly. First world problems. You know, I've been without money.
Right.
But I have never been poor.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I've seen it in, as you said, you know, you were in Haiti. I saw it in Jamaica. I saw it in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in Bermuda.
Right.
You know, I saw it in those places.
Right.
You know, third world type of poverty.
Right.
It's completely different.
Yeah. And it really, really made an impact on my life, because I stopped taking things for granted after that, you know.
Sure.
I you know, I became more grateful for the things that I actually had in my life, you know.
Great word.
Right?
Grateful.
Especially as a kid, you know, you don't get the newest Game Boy or this or that. You're like, oh, my life sucks. But then when you see someone who don't have running water or electricity, you're like, you know.
Think about this. Game Boy didn't exist.
Right.
Right, we had Pong.
Right, a pad and a stick. Put a ball in the
yeah,
stick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was, you know, our idea of games was actually to go out with a ball.
Right.
You know, we didn't have electronics.
Right.
We didn't know what that was.
Right.
Pac-Man didn't come out until I was in college.
Oh, man. So you went to a whole childhood with no electronic games.
Arcade games, that's all we had.
Coming back from Haiti, we didn't come back from Haiti until 2004. We were supposed to be there for 3 years. That was the plan originally. But there was a whole thing going on with the American government and the Haiti government. You know, they came, they took the Haitian president out the country, and basically they lost their mind.
Yeah,
the whole country lost their mind.
I remember that. Isn't that when the United States inputted a leader that was supposed to be the savior?
Right.
It turned out to be just another garbage bag that had happened before.
Right.
What a...
It was a mess.
Haiti is just been used as a dish rag for so long.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. It's so sad.
Right. And I didn't understand it as a kid until I saw, you know, the moment where, you know, you're watching helicopters fly over your home, like, you know, Black Hawk Down, you know, like every day, just army tanks just driving left and right. That's when I realized, like, oh, this is different, you know.
It's, that country in my mind, this is a personal opinion, that country gets abused, I believe, because of its location.
Right.
And how certain governments view it.
Right.
As logistical.
Right.
But I don't remember in my lifetime, you know, obviously I've been around a little longer than you, where that country has ever been stable.
Right. I, from my research, it never has been stable compared to, like, you know, maybe like a Puerto Rico. Never. It hasn't been like that
thing. But then you got, you know, then you got the Dominican Republic.
Right.
On the same island.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when... this is my naivety. So when I was learning geography, I never knew this, okay? I heard Haiti, and I saw this blot on the map.
Right.
Okay, that's Haiti.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until I got to New York,
okay,
Dominican.
Oh,
jeez,
wow.
Where are you guys from? Literally, I'm saying, you know, dumb country boy.
Coming. Right.
Because let me tell you, if you're coming from another city to New York City,
right,
you're the dumb country boy. All
right.
Because this is the real stuff.
Right. Yeah.
This is why every time you're outside the city and people say, oh, it's different in New York.
Right.
You're like, yeah, right. Until you get here.
Right.
And then you're like.
It's different.
Yeah, you have like this existential crisis when you move to New York.
Right.
But there's a, what was it? When I got to New York, I saw this whole community of Dominicans.
Right.
And I'm like, Dominicans, where are you guys from?
Right.
You know, and after they stop laughing, they look, well, from the Dominican Republic. Really? Okay. Where is that?
Right.
It's in the Caribbean. Really? Yeah, it's like right next to Haiti. What? You guys have your own separate island? He goes, no.
It's the exact same island.
It's the same island. And I'm like, okay, so over time, I'm like, how is it? You know, and I'm not saying that the Dominican Republic is a first world country. Obviously,
right.
It is not.
Right.
But it ain't Haiti.
No, it's not Haiti. Yeah.
They never make the news.
Right.
Okay? They're not in, you know, international politics.
Right.
It's not. I never understood what that.
It's literally two different worlds. I've been to Dominican Republic a number of times. Like, there's been times where I've drove from Haiti to the Dominican Republic, and it's literally like two different worlds. Literally, they some of them.
Did you need a passport?
No, you don't need a passport, but you do need identification. Yeah, you know. Especially, I mean, granted, I'm American, so I have my American passport. So, you know, that's one thing.
You get out of jail free card.
Yeah, like I checked my privilege when the last time I was over there. Cause I was like, you know, I'm like, oh wow, they don't treat, you know, because they from.
Did you just say privilege?
I checked my privilege.
Did you just say privilege?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I have privilege. I'm telling you.
Please. Another trigger word.
Well, my
next time is snap. It's like, privilege.
That's one of the moments where, you know, because over there, you know, some Dominicans don't, they look at Haitians like, you know, you're not of us, you know, we're not the same. You know,
sure,
they have like this thing going on that's been going on for years. There was one time, you know, I'm just walking the streets of DR like it's just New York City. I'm just walking around. I'm over here trying to film in different locations. Yeah. Okay, we're gonna go over here. We'll go down this alley.
So you were the dumb American.
Yeah, I was the dumb American, right? And the guy who was driving us around, he spoke both Spanish and Creole because he was mixed. He was mixed. Most of the people over there are, you know, they're mixed.
Right.
And he just started running towards me. He's like, hey, don't go over there. Don't go that way. You know, he looked for his gun just in case. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, you can't go that way. I'm like, why not? Like, I'm
a dumb American.
Right. And he's like, you know, he's like, yeah, when you walk and you don't say nothing, you look like the people here. But once you open your mouth, they know you're not from here. They know you're from a different country.
And all of a sudden, you're a target.
Right. Being able to, you know, travel the world at a young age and, you know, understand, you know, image and, you know, that people could put images together to, you know, tell a specific story.
Sure.
It helped me as, you know, as I got older to see things differently. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I didn't see the world between my four blocks.
Right.
You know, because there's people around my way who never left Queens. You know,
sure.
They never even come to the city, you know?
Yeah, that's another thing I saw when I moved to the city.
Right.
People who, you know, when you would talk to them about, you know, the rest of the country.
Right.
And I'm not talking about, like, going to California. I'm talking to, like, Pennsylvania.
Right.
Okay? You know, right next door.
Right.
Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Or New Jersey. Now, never really been.
Right.
What?
Right. Stuff that the drive away.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you went to college.
Yeah, for a short time. The situation was I wasn't able to get full financial aid.
Right.
So I was going to Full Sail University to get a bachelor's.
With all that privilege, you didn't.
Right? You would think, right? Like, I should get scholarships. Like, come on, guys.
Just didn't know how to game.
I definitely didn't know they had a game. So I would have gave them the sob story they was looking for. Like, yeah, I'm from the streets. You know, like, give them the
help
real
stuff. Right?
I didn't know. Like, if I knew, I probably would have played the game as better as I could.
Why wouldn't you?
Right?
Why wouldn't
you? It was a wake-up call becoming an adult to realize how the real world really worked. Mm-hmm. The real world really worked, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, because when you're in high school, especially in the millennial area, you know, we were told, you know, go to school, and once you finish school, you'll be able to go right into college.
Of course.
And the school of your choice.
Everybody wins.
Right. Everybody wins.
Everybody gets a trophy. Nobody has to lose.
Right.
We don't want to hurt
anybody. Oh, especially
students.
Everybody get a trophy. Especially my generation, because my mom made sure she put my brother and I in sports forever.
Right.
Like, you know, since we were kids, we never had Saturdays off. There was no Saturday morning cartoon for us. You know, it was either choir practice.
Wow, that sucks.
Right? Oh, tell me about it. I just wanted to watch. This is a little some Popeye.
Well, you know, it's like I grew up in, watching Westerns.
Right.
Because Saturday mornings were Westerns.
Right.
And then the cartoons mm-hmm. were like Johnny Quest.
Right.
Johnny Quest, man.
The Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
I actually tried to find that one time. And it's expensive.
Right, yeah.
You know, to actually buy the series.
Right.
Race Bannon, he was my man. Race Bannon.
Right.
That was the man of action.
Right.
You know? And I think a lot of characters were developed off of him.
Right.
But Johnny Quest was, yeah, man, that was.
I think they actually try to reboot Johnny Quest now, actually.
Oh, that'll
yeah.
be interesting. Yeah.
But,
Millennial Johnny Quest.
Right?
How are they going to do that?
I have no clue.
Haji?
There's no way Haji's going to be. No way.
Bandit the dog? No.
Like, those characters are disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. And that takes, you know, that.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah, let me check my privilege.
But, I remember specifically, you know, once I was in high school, you know, I had teachers who understood where I was going in life, and they were like, all right, let me tell you how things are going. What's going to happen after this?
Real,
you know, like, hey, you know, I know I'm teaching you, but I'm still paying my student loans.
Right.
You know, like they would explain to me, like, this is how debt works, and you know, before that, I'm just thinking, like, yeah, I'm just going to go to finish school, go to film school, I'm going to get a job at Universal by 23, and I'll be directing features. You know, just like that. They're like, yeah.
By the time I'm 30, I'll be sitting pretty. You know, Pacino will be calling me. You know. To do his next movie,
right?
And you know, Spike Lee will be on my speed dial. You know,
I call Oprah when I need a check. You know,
I don't know if I can fit you with my schedule.
Right?
Oh God! And yeah, man. A lot of people go through that. A lot.
Right. It's definitely a wake up call. You know, living that year in Haiti and you know seeing how the other half lived. You know, that was my first real time where I actually realized the world worked differently depending where you were.
Sure.
You know,
that makes sense.
You know, before that, you know, especially because all the movies I watched, you know, I had a very small-minded view of, you know, how the world works. And, you know, at this point, that's where I was like,
Scarface, bro.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a real small world.
And, you know, when I was trying to go to college and everything, you know, that's when I had to really go into the real world, you know, because right. The route I decided to take, because I was... I want to say I was 16 when I started working on my first real film. Well, it was a short at the time, and I extended to an actual full-length feature. So when all of my teachers were telling me, like, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen after you get out of school, I was like, so can I just rush to that part? So, you know, they offered me trade schools. You know, they were offering me, you know, different ways where I could get my diploma faster so I could, you know, go straight into college. I was just like, why am I going to wait, you know, the 4 years to get to that point? You know, so by my second year of high school, I was just like, get me to a trade school. Get me to whatever program so I can try to get my diploma faster so I could go to, you know, college faster. Because I was ready. I was like, let's hit the pavement. Let's do it.
Yep.
And then, you know, once I started, I was staying in Tallahassee, Florida. And I didn't know how how far Tallahassee was from Orlando. You know, I thought they were going to be just like New York. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to live with my sister in Tallahassee, yeah, and I go back and forth to school. Yeah. And then they're like, right?
It's like, yeah. No. No, having lived in Orlando, right. No. That is not a commute.
Right, no, no. And then
I don't care how fast you can go on the highway.
And, you know, that was the first, yes, you know, the first time I was living outside of my own community since I lived in Haiti that one time.
Sure.
So, you know, it was definitely a huge culture clash. And, you know, once the school told me, like, you know, I needed like another 50 grand just to go to the school, you know, because financially they only gave me like 5 grand. Mm-hmm. So I was able to just get a few books, my laptop, and, you know, I had to figure out the rest. So I was like, all right. And my mom at the time, that's when she started getting sick, because at this point it's almost been 20 years since she'd been working in the veteran home. So her knees are starting to, you know, come caving in, you know, got to do surgeries.
Sure.
So I was like, all right, let me come home back to New York and just work on my career.
But she's
here.
Okay now.
Yeah, yeah, she's okay now. I mean, her knees aren't that great.
Sure.
But, you know,
she's on disability?
Yeah, she's on disability right now. Okay. She's working our way towards retirement.
Yeah, you know, God bless, man, because right? Holy cow.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, if she's still been working nowadays, I would have been freaking out for
you. Right.
Jeez.
It was stressful when she was still working because, you know, then her knees just couldn't take it no more. You know, 16 hours a day on her feet. And at that age, I didn't understand it until I got myself a job and was on my feet for 13 hours. Like, oh, my mom worked 3 more hours than I did. Yeah. Like, oh, I understand you, Mom. I understand you completely, you know?
Yeah. We'll talk about a truckload of reality.
Right.
Right there.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Crazy, crazy stuff. So you went to school, your mom got ill, you had to come back.
Right.
And you started working jobs. Did you go to any other education
after college? No. Okay. Everything after that was self-education, you know. Sure. I mean, since I was a child, self-education was my main thing. Whatever I was learning in school, I had to also learn it at home, because we wasn't allowed to watch TV on weekdays.
Here's the other thing. What a great message that is.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. It's like, ooh. You know, self-education, right. Self-realization.
Right.
You know, being in congruence with your conscience.
Right.
You know, whatever else we were talking about. But, I mean, that is... But those are old-school values.
Right.
You know, those are old-school values.
Right.
And I think we've lost a lot of us.
Oh, yeah.
Lost mm-hmm. that. And the ones who actually had it are being drowned out.
Right.
Which is really, it's sad, but it's counterproductive, and mm-hmm. we really need to get back to that.
Right, I agree.
And I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's why we decided to do this.
Right.
Because coming from different areas, coming from different worlds,
mm-hmm.
Both from a generational standpoint and, you know, from a community standpoint. I think it's important that we have talks like this.
Right.
And we will, as we go forward, mm-hmm. we'll get into a lot of great different topics. And I think people are going to see that, you know, we don't take ourselves really seriously.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. or too seriously.
Right.
You know, we have some serious stances on things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think, I don't know, you tell me. I mean, you think that's... why we're doing this?
Yeah, I think what it is, you know, when we first met, we didn't know how our relationship was going to grow, you know. We were just in the same place, same time.
Because, you know, you were weird. I was just trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to deal with this kid? This weird kid who likes film and does... Show me that clip that you showed me the first time.
Which one? Oh, the trailer to my first film?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is going to be a ride. No question. And fast forward, look at this.
Right, you know, 50, 100 conversations later, you know. But I do feel like, you know, based on the conversation we do have, you know, I feel like America, not even just America, but, you know, just in general, you know, when it comes to especially our era, you know, they usually don't, you never see anything where people of our age come together and just talk, you know?
Right, exactly.
Without
shouting.
Right. You know, usually.
Without calling out each other names.
Right. You know, usually when you see that.
Shut it down. Shut it down.
It's always either like a debate, it's this or that. It's never just two Americans just having a conversation and just, you know, finding a common ground. You
exactly.
Know?
You like know? Gaming.
Right.
People don't never understand why, you know, I'm a gamer.
Right.
But I only play one game.
Right.
But it's a,
you know, I really think it's an important thing. And I think that's why we got to the point of doing this.
Right.
Is we both understood, hey, you know, this really means something.
Right.
We should get it out there.
Right.
Whatever that means.
Right.
You know, as I've talked to you about, it's like, you know, for us to get to the point where we are, you know, being true to ourselves.
Right.
And we always want to make sure that this is authentic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unedited us.
Right. Unedited, unfiltered.
Yeah. Well, yeah. As people grow to know me, it's like, did he just say that? Oh, no, he didn't.
Well, you know, I've definitely heard a few. I've heard a few of those moments. But, you know, the whole thing is about being the change that we want to see in the world.
Exactly.
You know?
Absolutely. We want to be the change. And I think that's, you know what? I think that's going to be the message that we're going to send to people.
Right.
And we should close every episode out with that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, be the change.
Be the change, everyone.
T-shirts to come.
Until next time, everybody. Okay. Have a good one.